Blogging the Boys presents Cowboys Radio with Rabs and McCool. Here are your hosts, Rabble Rouser and Landon McCool.
Hello, howdy, and welcome to another edition of Blogging the Boys Cowboys Radio. I'm Landon McCool, and with me in sorrow, Rabble Rouser. Rabble, are you still with us?
I am. I'm hanging on. There are times when I wish I wasn't. It's sort of interesting, you know. In many ways, I'm back to where I was after week two when Romo was injured the first time.
Yeah.
Which is this feeling that a season is a fragile thing. It's like a delicate butterfly, and it's so easy to crush its wings. You know, it can go wrong so easily, especially in today's parity-driven league when almost every team is basically the same, you know, to the talent distribution, so similar. And, you know, it actually reminds me of this applies last year too. You know, I don't know that this team is any worse than the team last year. You know, obviously they've had much different run of injury luck, and we'll talk about that later in the podcast, I would imagine. But, you know, we talked many times last year about how the winning formula was such a kind of delicate equation. It wasn't like they just bludgeoned people, and if 10 things went wrong, they still won like those 90s teams. Pretty much everything had to go right, not only from game to game, but over the course of the year for them to win. And, it all began with the offensive line play and the running game, et cetera, as we recounted many times last year. But I think one of the things we're seeing this year is in many ways how delicate last year's winning formula is, because a couple of those things are different. You know, there's a couple different, inputs into key variables, and the equation just doesn't hold up. So,
well, shame on us for doing that, frankly, because I mean, if you remember last year, we even said last year that everything that had to go right did go right at the time. We even talked about like before the season last year, that a lot of these things are going to have to fall the Cowboys' way in order for them to be contenders. And they did. You know, and they seem to fall the Cowboys' way, and whether it's luck or, you know, injuries, and then, you know, a combination of good luck being made by situations, that seems to be what happened last year, and this year it just seems like it's the opposite.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right.
So what do we got in this podcast? We obviously are both feeling completely down because we are feeling a certain amount of defeat, but we are plowing through for you guys to continue to try to bring you good Cowboys content and keep moving forward. So what do we have for today's podcast?
Well, I think we have no choice really, but to label this the Romo-geddon podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Given that his performance and his injury on Thanksgiving. And so we're not going to bring in any guests this week. Instead, in honor of Thanksgiving, I think we're just going to sit here and digest for a bit before we welcome any guests back into our proverbial podcast home. So you and I are just going to sit and talk about a few topics that are at hand. I think one thing needs to be said, which is that, as you were just saying, we're going to soldier through, but we're going to soldier through by resisting as much as possible talk about off-season moves, et cetera, because, you know, we still have 5 games left in the regular season. And so we want to dedicate as much of our podcast time to regular season issues and concerns as we can, you know, through this next month and change.
And also, just to point out, it's you know, even early off-season talk can be kind of fruitless and more just fun than anything else. So to discuss any kind of off-season talk while mid-season is really pointless, because it's all extreme speculation. And, all, you know, even draft stuff is going to go wildly different by March or May, you know, whenever we get there. So, you know, to speculate about a lot of that stuff at this point is great fun, and we'll do it on Twitter all day. But I think it's to completely try to go into full off-season mode is folly, and also just, you know, it's wasting what the 5 games we have left, whether or not we're in it or not.
And frankly, it's doing what Jason Garrett and the Cowboys seem unwilling to do, which is to quit.
Yes. Absolutely.
And so we're going to soldier through and give you winning podcasts. We're going to try to be better every week, and we're going to try to win every one of these podcasts, through the remaining 5 weeks of the season.
Just try to make this podcast better each week. You know.
Absolutely.
All right. So I guess, you know, we need to start off discussing, you know, kind of where things stand right now. And I guess the first place to start would be, you know, Romo and his performance in the game and the injury after his part of the game was over. I mean, I guess I'll kind of just start off if you're okay with that. I mean, yeah. I think, you know, obviously his performance was not great by any stretch of the imagination. He clearly managed to show seemingly more rust than the first game. I'm going to be honest here. I haven't gone back and watched the game really a second time or watched it all 22 yet. And I apologize to all of you guys out there for that. But I will say, just from what I did see, it was difficult at times to kind of parse. It seemed like part of it was, you know, him physically being uncomfortable, and part of it is his processor speed was just not up to where it needed to be in order for him to execute the plays well. He clearly didn't look comfortable, and sometimes it seemed like it was justified, you know, that the pocket was breaking down at times, but even at the times when it wasn't, he looked way too ready to pull the trigger. He threw, you know, several of his interceptions were just, you know, plays where we're like, why are you even throwing the ball there? Just take a sack or throw the ball away. And so I think that's part of what made the whole thing extremely frustrating, is that it seemed like Romo had regressed to a certain degree. And then, you know, the injury, just to kind of, you know, put some finality to it, it's obviously was a gut punch. And I think overall it may have just been better. Honestly, if things were going to be like that and Tony was still going to struggle to kind of get his game speed up for a couple games, then it may be better just to try to, you know, shut it down for the season. Now, I mean, let me hear your thoughts, and then we'll go on with the rest of it. What were your thoughts on his performance, the injury, Thanksgiving in general?
A couple of things. I think that one of the things we're not doing is giving enough credit to the Carolina Panthers.
Absolutely, yeah, they played fantastic. They're a great team, and I don't know if I said it beforehand, and I'm sorry to just jump right into your spot, but I'm a huge Cam Newton fan, obviously, because I'm an Auburn Tiger, so I've been a big fan of his, and I'm thrilled with his success. But yes, the Carolina Panthers played outstanding.
They did, and so I think a lot of his regression can be attributed to the fact that they're just significantly better than the Dolphins. The Dolphins seemed like they had a little bit of a kind of upspike when Dan Campbell took over as coach, but in the last few weeks they've been getting beaten pretty soundly. And I think when the story of the season is told, we're going to look back at that Miami game, and instead of it being a kind of rousing victory, we're going to be like, oh, you know what, that was two really bad teams playing, and the Cowboys happened to come out on top, and in many respects because they were able to run the ball and protect Romo. They didn't ask Romo to do much. And you and I, as we've said a couple times on the podcast, have a weekly film session with our good friend Joey Ikes. And I was one of the lines of inquiry that I really wanted to pursue in leading up to the Thanksgiving game was to look at the Carolina defense, et cetera, but also just to kind of talk about how rusty Tony Romo was even during the Miami game. He had a lot of passes that floated. I think there were a lot of times when he the kind of windows that he saw there were open enough or wide enough that he could be a little late on them and they'd still be open. And against Carolina, those same windows were shut. So I don't know that he was any worse against Carolina. I think maybe he was a little bit, but I think that he was just rusty from coming back. And so, you know, so my feeling now is just that, you know, it was such a heroic attempt on Romo's part. I really feel badly for him because it was very clear that, you know, in his behavior, he believed firmly and fundamentally that he was going to be able to come back and lead this team to a kind of mounting level of success that allowed them to peak in the playoffs and they could make a legitimate playoff run. I think that, you know, when he told Tom Brady, I'll see you in February, I think he absolutely fundamentally believed it. And so maybe because of that, I think we were all fooled, and maybe even Tony fooled himself a little bit. But, you know, to expect him with that much time off, especially he didn't play in the preseason. You know, I mean, you know, he hasn't been playing at all. He played a game and a half. And, you know, to expect him to just kind of, you know, jump right back into mid-season form when all these other guys are playing at top speed now as we, you know, sort of begin a playoff run, I think was really unfair. And it showed just how far behind he was. You know, several people I talked to were saying, well, we should probably expect him to look like he did against Tennessee last year. And I think he probably did look about like that, because against Tennessee, he wasn't very good and they relied on the running game. And if the running game doesn't work, what do? Then you're asking your quarterback, who's about a half second slow on everything, to try to make plays against the fastest linebacker unit that I've seen in a long time. Mm-hmm. And so it's, you know, it's just not going to happen. But, you know, kudos to the Panthers. I think that there are a lot of other teams that the Cowboys might have been able to eke out a victory against, even with Tony processing so slowly. But that's the one team you just – I mean, you know, that's a buzzsaw you just can't do anything about.
You know, and I think obviously they are a really super talented team. And I think also we should account for the fact that not enough is being talked about how injured Dez is. And it's pretty clear on based on his play. And so, you know, you got a hurt quarterback coming back against an extremely tough defense. And without your playmakers being healthy, it's like it may have been unrealistic for us to have good expectations for us to win this game in the first place. But
Or to even salvage the season after Romo's injury.
Absolutely. That was definitely, you know, a huge long shot for sure. But I think even to hoping to win that game was maybe even too much to hope for at this point. Which kind of leads us to our next question, you know, and the next two actually are kind of tied together. Mm-hmm. You know, they've decided not to put Romo on IR. With the idea that if Castle wins a couple games and the NFC East continues to crater somehow as bad, if not worse, than the Cowboys are, that he could come back in the playoffs if they were to somehow, you know, get in there with an NFC championship. So I guess the question is, you know, what are your thoughts about them not putting Romo on the IR? And I guess the follow-up question to that is, is that dumb because the season is over, or is that not dumb because the season is not over to you?
I think it's not dumb because the season is not over. Because think about what that does. It's clear that he's going to be out about another 8 weeks. And so most people are looking, you know, at the calendar and saying, okay, if he comes back, he's not coming back until the NFC Championship game. And I think we all recognize that the Cowboys being in the NFC Championship game is pretty far-fetched. It's pretty silly. Not that it can't happen, but it's pretty ridiculous. But the flip side of that is, what are you telling the team if you put them on IR? Mm-hmm. Right? You're telling them you don't believe they can make that run. And so, you know, I guess the question then becomes, is the 53rd player on the roster worth the ability to just lose that 53rd spot, but tell the team, sort of announce to them, we think that you guys have it in you to do this again, right? We're going to try this again. We just got done with this. We're going to try it again, which is we're going to ask you guys to win some games without Romo and put the team in a position so that when he comes back, he can take us to the promised land. And I think we all look at this and scoff. It's utterly ridiculous. But these are professional athletes. These are alpha males. Garrett is not the kind of guy who's going to quit until they're mathematically eliminated. I think once they are, you'll see them put him on IR. That's what they did in 2010. They were 5-9, which was – it was probably at least 4, 5, maybe 6 games after he was injured that they finally put him on IR. Mm-hmm. And that was when they were essentially mathematically eliminated. So I think we're going to see the same thing this year. Now, I guess my question for you is – well, first of all, where do you fall in line in terms of this line of questioning? But then I guess the other question is, when was the season over for you?
Well, I think I agree with your analysis on it. I think that what else were they going to do? I mean, you don't really – what it is sacrificing the culture of the team for that 53rd roster spot, isn't it? Like, I mean, it's like, yep. Well, we can continue to fight, which has always been our mantra. And, you know, as Garrett says, you know, this is really the time more than any other time that you kind of prove who you are, right? When things aren't going well, it's easy to kind of continue on when things are going well, but like, this is really kind of a test of the testament of how well the culture works, if they can keep, you know, maintaining, even though things look terrible. You know, I think, I think that the season was over for me when on Thanksgiving. You know, I mean, I think I held out some hope even after all the losing, even when Romo got back. I thought that if we could find a way to get the Romo that we got close to the Romo that we got near the end of the year last year, that we could do something or at least make a run of it. And I was more than willing to take it week to week at that point and see how it went. And I think ultimately that was setting myself up for emotional disaster because ended up what happening is that when I was telling you this, that I couldn't watch any more of the game. And as some of you guys, I'm sure as Cowboy fans will crucify me for this. And I understand that. That makes sense. But I had to walk away, and it was, you know, 'cause it's Thanksgiving and I had friends over at my house and who weren't Cowboys fans, who were just, you know, normal folks who were staring at the guy who was losing his ever-loving mind in the corner by himself. And so I turned the TV off, and I think I was telling you, I think literally 30 seconds after I turned the TV off, I checked, I was going to go on Twitter to tweet at somebody, and I saw that Romo's collarbone had broken. And then, and that was it. And it all just kind of washed over me, all the anger and hate, and I was, you know, ready to join the dark side. And, that's really when it kind of was the realization that, this is over. It's not happening. And so I think that's really, the analytical side of me, the part of me that wants to be logical and analyze the Cowboys as opposed to being just, a hard on my sleeve fan wants to tell you that it was week two. You know, when to be realistic, when he broke his collarbone the first time, then it wasn't realistic for us to kind of do what we had set out to do. But Don't Stop Believing kept on playing in my head every single time I thought of Tony, and I hate that song. So I think for some reason I carried a torch for another seven games, and then all the way up until Tony was laying on the turf again. The same way. So I think that's when it was over for me. What about you? When was it over for you too? I mean, when did you feel like that moment happened?
Well, you were saying earlier that the more analytical side of you probably would have said that it was over week two, and that's when it was over for me. Maybe that's because I'm predominantly analytical. but I think also part of it is that there's two things there. One is that. The damned NFC East continued to give us hope.
That's the real problem.
If there had been, and in many ways that really is the problem, if there had been a regular good team or even a pair of good teams in the NFC East, you know, that were, you know, let's say there's someone who's what, 8-3 right now, 7-4, you know, we'd be eliminated at this point.
Yeah.
And but the fact that, you know, the first place team is below 500 continued, despite this ridiculous losing streak, continued to give us mathematical hope. But so the time when I said it was over was when he went down the first time. And that's also because of the way I look at seasons. You know, I mean, obviously I see value in getting into the playoffs because, you know, as the Giants in 2007 and 2011 have shown, once the tournament starts, you can do anything. At the same time, usually what happens is, you know, a team is good and maybe their record isn't as good as they are or something, but there's usually a good team that makes a run. And usually what happens is, you know, it's one of the top two teams that gets home field advantage. I mean, it's been a long time since we've seen one number one seeds go to the Super Bowl with complete regularity. But I still believe it's a significant advantage to A, get a bye, because that's one less opportunity for, you know, some bizarre thing happen and to have to play a playoff caliber team and get eliminated, and B, to get home field advantage. So to me, you know, a season with a good team that has deep playoff run aspirations really means getting one of the top two seeds. And as soon as he went down, I knew they wouldn't. So I knew that what that meant was they were going to have to kind of go in the back door, win a bad division, get a bye against the strongest wild card, or get a home game rather against the strongest wild card in the first round, try to play a team that's probably as good, if not better than them, and then go on the road the rest of the way. And, you know, I mean, not that that's not possible. Last year's team showed that they had enough kind of toughness and grit to be able to go on the road and win. But It just didn't seem particularly likely with this bunch. So that's when it was over for me. And you know, the thing about this is, and this is a kind of interesting, weird part of all of this, is that even in those years when they were 8-8, you know, and they were defying what I'm talking about, you know, they were playing meaningful games in December, and it's been since 2010 was the last year that this team hasn't played games that mean something all the way, really, until, you know, week 16 last year and week 17 every other year. So it's a weird feeling. It's been a long time since we ease into December and said, yeah, you know what? None of these games really mean anything. And technically they still do mean something, I suppose, but I think we all know that they're kind of meaningless. So I think that, you know, with that in mind, one of the things that we have to ask each other, and you know, as Cowboy fans, we all have to ask each other, is how did we get here? Ugh. And so, you know, and we'll talk about that more. We have a segment later in the show where we want to talk more specifically about like what were the contributing factors. But I guess one of the questions I want to ask you, because I think this is something we're both interested in, is, and this is something that our good friend Bird Dog tweeted about, I think when they first hired Scott Linehan as their offensive coordinator, you know, a year and a half ago or so, which is that his offense is known in league circles as being star reliant. You know, when he was with Detroit, he relied on Stafford to Calvin Johnson maybe too much or something. Or maybe what he does is he's always trying to scheme to get his stars catches and touches and that kind of thing. So I guess the question is, while that really works well when you have you know, the second coming of the triplets in 2014, when all three of those guys are gone in 2015, is there a kind of fundamental offensive problem if in fact your offense isn't capable of adapting to the inevitable injuries that happen? What do you think about that?
Well, I think this is really tough to dissect, and I think it's actually made more difficult to dissect by what happened this year, because you know, the problem is not just that Tony Romo was gone. It's that Tony Romo was gone and Dez Bryant was gone. And then when Dez came back, he still wasn't 100%. So it's tough to parse all that. You know, I think it's tough I definitely agree with Bird Dog's assessment, or at least him passing along that information that NFL circles see Linehan as star reliant. I could see that for sure. And I could see that in the way he calls games at times for sure as well. I also think that most of the NFL is that way. Mm-hmm. I think if anything, maybe what to me the problem is, and this is something that I've been thinking about a lot. I've been doing a lot. You know, one of those things that happens when the season is over, quote unquote, and you start losing ball games, is you start, you know, kind of pulling back and having these, you know, larger philosophical thoughts about the team and that sort of thing. You know, one of the things that I was thinking about is, you know, is it time for us to try and find, or is this a sign that we need to find a way to make our system less elite QB reliant, I guess, is really where I would like to see us move, because I think Linehan was put in a very difficult situation with Romo and Bryant out, and especially compounded with the fact that they were trying this, they were kind of in the middle of this you know, running back by committee experiment that ultimately kind of went off the rails when Joe Randall's personal life went off the rails. And so I think that kind of confluence of events all made a perfect storm of crap for Scott Linehan. And I think that makes what you're asking very difficult to mold. Mm-hmm. But I do think that I am interested in I'm interested in not being held hostage by my quarterback anymore, you know, mm-hmm. and I know that the argument is that, well, you know, it's very similar to what my argument was for the NFL and star reliant, is that all teams are quarterback reliant. Of course, it's a quarterback game, but I think that there is definitely ways to make your system require less expertise to move the football. Let's say that. I think what makes this system really, 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 really go is that Romo gets to the line and has the full complement of the playbook at the line with him, right? Because he's basically a coach in the field, and he can And he can change the play and do what he needs to do, make line adjustments or whatever. And that's what, you know, kind of makes that offense special at times. I think that we need to find a way to get a system that, you know, isn't quarterback agnostic. I mean, obviously the quarterback is good enough, is the most affected single player. I mean, that's a horrible way of saying it. It's the player that affects the play the most by himself of any player, maybe in any sport, period. Mm-hmm. But I think there's got to be a way to try to mitigate that some, right? I mean, because I think there at this point, you know, we are taking the logic of, you know, quarterbacks drive the league to the natural extreme where it's every single thing on our team, and we basically couldn't run an offense with, you know, I mean, Matt Castle's not the best backup in the league, but he certainly isn't terrible. And you know, he was throwing for pretty decent yards, but not enough to score at all, not enough to score. And I think that's maybe where we need to figure out is maybe find a way to that a system that is not so heavily reliant on our quarterback having to play at an elite level just for us to score. I mean, you know, our running game was not good enough to be relied on to help him out. So I think that's more where I would say not so much star reliant, but I feel like our system has become too QB reliant and without Romo's elite skills, I mean, the offense just basically doesn't work.
And I guess I'm wondering how much that again has to do with injuries to like Bryant, James Hanna, Lance Dunbar,
and all these guys, and Bryant is the obvious one, but the two guys you just mentioned play super important roles in specific parts of the game plan, right? Like Hanna is a huge point of attack blocker, and if you don't think that the team missed him when he was gone, just go look at the yards numbers for when he's there versus when he's not there. I mean, they clearly
it's night and day.
It's crazy, and I would argue with anyone. I would argue against this if I hadn't gotten looked myself and had it beaten to my head by Dan Turner. But on top of that, you know, I think losing Dunbar was really, really bad. And we discussed this for us playing a lot of those Tampa 2 type defenses, you know, that weren't going to allow the big plays to happen because he was the guy that was going to get all your yards underneath that could take it to the house anytime he touched the ball. So, you know, like I said, it's tough to completely get in a vacuum evaluation of Scott Linehan's offense being too star reliant when honestly we've had basically the two extremes the last two seasons, haven't we? Where we've had healthy superstars excelling at last season, and this year we've had unhealthy superstars not excelling. So it's really kind of obviously the answer somewhere in between, but all we've seen are the extremes, so it's tough to kind of find the middle.
Right, we can't test the variables because we need the other two to be present and working to test to see, okay, what is it like if you have two of the three? And then let's move this one out and put this one in. And what is it like if you have those two?
You need a third point to triangulate.
Yeah, exactly. You can't triangulate when you have 0 points.
Yeah, exactly. So
I guess the other thing that you were talking a minute ago about, you know, less quarterback reliant. And, obviously in the wake of Romo's injury and even in the wake of, you know, the first injury and the quarterback play that happened immediately – in the wake of that, you know, we've been hearing a lot about not drafting a quarterback in the recent past and about not finding a better veteran backup. So I guess my question for you is, are those valid criticisms, or is that just kind of like cherry picking now because, you know, Romo went down and they lost all those games?
I think not drafting a quarterback in the recent past is cherry picking. I think not finding a better veteran quarterback is half and half. Let's say that. I tend to think that, and I think maybe the team may disagree with me, and I don't. I mean, that's fine. I tend to think the idea of just drafting quarterbacks like every year is a antiquated idea, and to me it's wasting draft capital to a certain degree, because you know, and we've gone over this, it's very difficult to develop a quarterback in the era of the CBA. It's difficult because of the contract length, because of the limits in play time, the limits of coach associations with the players. All this is dictated by the CBA, so I think the idea of you know, some of these mid-round prospects signing contracts, you know, drafting these guys and then getting them up to a place where they're kind of ready to see where they're at and it's their contract's up next year, and it's like it makes for a lot of difficult decisions for a lot of these squads, and I think a lot of these players just don't ever kind of get to that level anyways. I mean, there just hasn't been a lot of mid-round success there. We've been over the drafting quarterback. I think my whole philosophy is that if you want a quarterback, you pay what you got to pay to go get one, and in draft capital or in cash, basically. Mm-hmm. So if you need a quarterback, we need to go draft one high. If you don't, then you need to find a veteran backup, and he needs to have experience, obviously, starting games, and also, and I think this is something that needs to be pointed out, starting games and also coming in off the bench to finish a game, because those are two different things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is where the rubber meets the road with the problem with the Cowboys, right? Because if you looked at Brandon Weeden, when he came in relief for games, he usually did really well. I mean, really well. Yeah. And so it really, it wasn't until he had to go through a week of game planning, had to go in where the team was kind of the opposite team was game planning for him, that you started to really see his deficiencies. That he doesn't have great touch. He really obviously couldn't operate the game plan that the Cowboys wanted him to. I mean, he could operate it, but he couldn't operate it with winning success. You know, like he could operate it, but he could only play well enough to not turn the ball over, not well enough to win. You know, and so I think if the idea was, hey, we need a guy who can come off the bench and help us finish a game where Romo gets hurt. Because if Romo gets hurt for any extended period of time, we're screwed anyways, then Brandon Weeden was probably okay as your backup. I mean, just by what he's shown us. Mm-hmm. But since, you know, our guy broke his collarbone and basically should have been, I mean, you know, it's all its purposes, was out for the year, or at least half the year, Weeden wasn't that guy. And so you needed to go get a guy like Castle who has success in coming in and starting multiple games for an injured backup. He obviously showed out a little bit better there. I think it's tough to I understand why people are upset about the quarterbacks, quote unquote, not performing better. But I also think that, I mean, what did you expect? You know, it's like, I mean, there aren't enough good quarterbacks in the league to fill the NFL with starters.
Mm-hmm.
Like how are you, and we've been over this too, how are you going to expect that we're going to be able to get a guy who's even, you know, 60% of Tony Romo? And yeah. Could they have found a better guy? I don't know, maybe, but I think it would have been negligible, the difference between that guy and Castle or Weeden, considering the situation that was they were thrown into, especially Weeden. You know, I mean, I don't think he got any games with Dez, did he? And, you know, I mean, that was just really a tough situation for any quarterback to kind of have to jump into, but especially a backup quarterback.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot of stuff there. You know, it's funny because we talk about drafting a quarterback, and the example that everyone wants to use now is David Carr, right? Because he was not a first rounder. So people say if they'd spent the second rounder a couple drafts back on David Carr, he now would have been ready to step in. And my feeling is that, well, he's playing well now because he got his butt kicked for a couple of years.
Exactly. Yeah.
The kind of logical fallacy that I think everyone is swimming about in right now, in terms of, you know, the David Carrs of the world or whatever promising, you know, a young quarterback that the Cowboys could have drafted because he was still on the board when they had a pick at some point in recent years, is that that guy's going to have gotten no playing time. I mean, yes, he'll have gotten some Romo Wednesday time and he'll have gotten a little time during camp, but he won't have the kind of time that, you know, where you need to just get your guy and put him in there and, you know, let him survive and let him take his lumps and he gets better. So I honestly don't think that a young quarterback would have fared any better than some of these guys, and may have fared far worse. At least these veterans were able to keep the games close, so they were meaningful in the fourth quarter. A young guy might have been throwing three picks in the first half, you know, and they would have been down by 21 in most of these games, and they would have gotten blown out more. And so then the other thing about this is, and this is very, you talked about the the Whedon and Castle kind of trajectory. And there's a couple of local DFW media guys I'd like to kind of refer to now. And the first is the great Bob Sturm. And one of the things he's been talking about a little bit more recently, sort of asking a question, is would Castle have fared differently had he been acquired by the team back in, let's just say, February, March? Mm. And I think this is kind of an interesting philosophical question because, Jerry Jones is now that Romo's hurt again, is now saying, well, maybe now Castle can, we'll have a little bit more of the playbook. So it's very clear that he was operating with just a section of the playbook. He doesn't know the whole playbook. He was doing the best he could, as a veteran to soak stuff up, but he didn't know the whole thing. And so there was a whole set of limitations on him and his ability that might not have been there had he been there for a full camp, et cetera, et cetera. Not to mention that it's in camp when you learn to develop that kind of symbiotic relationship with your receivers that he never has had this year and won't for the rest of the year because it takes an offseason to develop it. It took Romo and Dez 3 years to develop, for Christ's sake. How's he supposed to just step in and do it?
Exactly.
And the other person I like to bring up is someone who I don't respect a fraction as much as I do Bob Sturm, but it was a really interesting point he made, and that's Steve Dennis, who tweeted that he heard from an insider that Jason Garrett wanted to upgrade the backup quarterback position in the offseason but was outvoted. And so and I don't know if his target was Matt Castle, but it is an interesting thing to think about. It seems like, and I agree with your assessment, which is that the Cowboys organization in the front office says if Romo goes down for any extended period of time, we're screwed anyway. The guy we have is perfectly sufficient to go in and finish a game or to do, he's perfectly fine for mop-up duty.
He's a closer. He's a closer. He's not a middle reliever,
He's not, and he may not even be a closer in the sense of a closer plays a close game. No, right? He's a mop-up man.
But he
can also, come in and he pitches quite well when he has a 6 or 7 run lead in the eighth inning. Mm-hmm. What he can't do is start a game against a good team and win. I don't know how much stock to put in either of these particular speculations, but it does make me wonder what would have happened if they had gotten Castle earlier, or at least some other veteran backup earlier. Would that have made a difference when Romo went down? Because you'd have someone who can then apply his experience to the full. Playbook and develop some kind of rapport with the other, the other offensive weapons in the offseason, neither of which have happened yet with Matt Castle.
Isn't that the maddening thing, though? The truth of the matter is that the only way you're going to get a great quarterback, not the only way, but the most likely place that you're going to find a great quarterback is in the top 10, 5 picks of the draft, right? Mm-hmm. How the hell are you going to get top 10, 5 picks in the draft if you've got a backup quarterback who's coming in and winning a bunch of games for you? That's the thing about it that makes you crazy is that, of course you don't want to tank these games. Of course you don't. But at the same time, you're not really going to get somebody who's Romo's heir probably until you are bad enough to draft or you trade your way into the top 10 or 5 picks, So I think – the team basically went where it needed to, and maybe it's going to be a blessing for this team that we'll get a top 10 pick. And I don't even know necessarily that we're drafting a quarterback in the top 10 picks if we're drafting in the top 10 picks next year. But the point is to me that, you can kind of Band-Aid fix the quarterback position, but honestly, that is how you get into QB purgatory. If you're never willing to just finally invest the money into going out and getting a proper quarterback, if you're just doing – you keep getting these guys who are, helping your team putter along just well enough that you feel like you don't quite need to replace the quarterback, that is QB purgatory. It's that idea that you've got a guy who's probably good enough, but he isn't ever getting any better, and so you remain in that nebulous 8-8, 9-7 – 7-9 range for years on end, always drafting, in the 17 to, 15 range, and you never get your guy because you just are kind of wasting away in that spot, and you never get access to the top guys.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe this is for the best. Maybe this is what we needed. So I think at this point we need to go ahead and take a quick break. We're going to come back and do top five reasons. Before we do, I want to make sure we plug Blogging the Boys and make sure that they're getting the proper traffic over there. Even though the season may feel it's over, it is not over, guys. So make sure you're checking out bloggingtheboys.com for all your information, articles, analysis about what went wrong, about what's going right. I'm sure we'll have, you know, all kinds of pontification on what's going to happen in the off season. Anything you would want to know about the Cowboys, bloggingtheboys.com is going to have it. Follow them on Facebook, Blogging the Boys, and on Twitter, at Blogging the Boys.
Welcome back, everybody. Okay, here's what we want to do next. We want to take a page from Chris Rock and use the notion of the top five list, which if you haven't seen his most recent movie, you should, because it's actually really good. And it's based upon this notion of the top five list. And we want to take that as the kind of generator for our next segment. So the first of these is actually not going to be a top five because that's probably more games than we need. But we wanted to talk about and sort of share our top three best and worst Thanksgiving games in our respective fandoms. So I'll tell you what, why don't we both go through and just list our top three good, you know, experience games. And then if we have any overlap, maybe we can talk about them a little bit. So, Landon, why don't you start us off? What are your top three Thanksgiving games?
Okay, number three I put as the 91 Thanksgiving game. I thought that was like the first time that 90s team felt like it was going to be good. 92 Thanksgiving game, which is just a really great Emmitt game where against the Giants where he had 17 carries for 120 yards and a touchdown and then another 38-yard screen pass for a touchdown. And then my number one game was the Garrett game in 94, obviously because of what happened in that game and what a fantastic game it was. But also, on a personal note, I actually got to go on the sideline pregame and meet a couple of the guys and take some pictures. It was really, really just a kind of awesome fan experience. So not only being at the game, but to go on the sideline for that game was really, really incredible.
That's actually really interesting because you know, my top experiences run pretty similarly to yours. It's funny because the game number three for me is the 1990 game, not the 91, which was when the Cowboys beat the Redskins 27-17. And both Emmitt and Michael Irvin had huge games. And Emmitt sort of capped off the game with a long touchdown run. And I remember saying to myself, oh, you know what? These guys aren't just good. They're special. And I made a commitment to myself at that moment to never miss a game when those guys were playing. And I never did. I never did. I didn't miss a game again until after all three of them had retired. And the number two for me is the 2006 game, which was Tony Romo's coming out party on national TV when he threw five touchdown passes, and then the Cowboys beat the Buccaneers 38-10. And then, of course, the top experience for me because I was just a little too young to have ever seen the Clint Longley Thanksgiving comeback, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So the next best backup quarterback comeback is the 94 game, just like you said, where Garrett improbably led a comeback against a very good Packers team.
Yeah, I'll never forget watching Reggie White, who was the Reverend Reggie White, cursing out Cowboys fans as he was walking off in the tunnel because he was so pissed. And Eric Williams just gave him all that he could handle that day. It was
absolutely
an incredible matchup to watch. So, okay, so you want to start? Why don't you start with the worst three?
Oh, thank you so much. My number three is actually the 1998 game. If people might forget, because the 1998 season finished so poorly, and the Cowboys, you know, finished 10-6, and then lost in the first round of the playoffs to, of all teams, the Cardinals. But the Cowboys went into that game having had a very promising start to the season at 8-3, and so it was a real showdown for NFC supremacy against the Vikings and Randy Moss, their rookie wide receiver. And Moss destroyed the Cowboys. Yeah, I think he only had like three or four catches, but every one of them was a long touchdown. Vikings win 46-36. The Cowboys were exposed, and they never really recovered. The second worst, I'm actually combining 2 years, and it happens to be the last 2 years. So the last two Thanksgivings have been sort of eerily similar and very disturbingly so, in that an unprepared Cowboys team comes in against another sort of NFC power, whether it's for, you know, NFC supremacy or division supremacy or whatever, or even to try to get back in a playoff race like this year, and basically gets sent home with a tail between their legs. They've been outscored the last two Thanksgivings, 66-24. And Romo in particular, as we talked about in the opening segment, hasn't looked right in either of them. And so, you know, the Cowboys used to sort of dominate Thanksgiving and then use that 10 or 11 day rest period to kind of gear up for the end of the season. And, you know, so the last two years have not been kind to the Cowboys at all. And then, of course, my worst one, 1993, the Leon Letsnow game. You know, the Cowboys started behind the eight ball that year, won a bunch of games in a row to get back in it, to get to 7-2, I believe. And then lost to Atlanta. Troy Aikman got hurt. Emmitt Smith got hurt. Aikman came back against the Dolphins, I think. I don't even remember exactly. But it was one of those sort of hard-fought games, and it looked like they were going to pull one out, and they didn't. And it was just devastating. And, you know, for me – we talked a little bit about this in the green room before we started. For me, I take losses much, much harder when I think the team is really special. You know, when I think the team has a chance to you know, go all the way, that kind of thing. So in the 90s, when they lost, I was devastated because every loss had – it was so meaningful.
Yeah.
I have to say, this year on Thanksgiving, I listened to the game and I didn't really give it a second thought. I haven't even gone back to it because – it's not worth it. Like, it's just another loss. Last year's was a little bit more difficult because it was very sobering. But in the 90s, a game like that, I mean, it might have made the difference between, you know, hosting the 49ers in the NFC Championship game and going to San Francisco, which really could have made the difference in going to a Super Bowl. And so I ruined Thanksgiving for everybody after that. I after that happened, there was a black cloud over my head, and we had a bunch of guests over, and I was just so insufferably unhappy. And I radiated my unhappiness so palpably that everybody else, I think, had probably the worst Thanksgiving they ever had too. How about you? What are yours?
Well, my list is pretty much exactly the same, except I split up 2014 and 15 into two each. And then, you know, that 93 Miami game was not great for me either. I was actually – I was 14 at the time, and we were all in the car, my mom, my dad, and my brother and sister, and on our way to Thanksgiving dinner – well, it's really lunch, and then with the idea that we're going to go to the game afterwards. And for those of you who aren't from Dallas or from Texas, let me just tell you that snow that we got on Thanksgiving was not normal. And people that are from Texas are terrible at driving on icy roads. And apparently people who maintain Texas roads are terrible at getting rid of ice on those roads. Because we were driving on the highway that day and my dad lost control of the car and we were in a car accident, but only, I mean, everyone was fine, except there was a lot of, as I told Rabble, there was a lot of corn pudding everywhere. But it was enough that we had to get the car towed. We were late to dinner, and I actually didn't even get to go to the game because of the all the mess. And then to watch all of that unfold on top of all the other crap that had happened to us that day was just like, wow, that's terrible. So, that was definitely the worst one. And I did want to point out one other thing that I thought was interesting about that too, was that was the last game that Dallas lost that season. And it was also the last game that Miami won that season, because I think two weeks before, Dan Marino had torn his Achilles. So he was out for the season. He didn't even play that game. So it was really, really a disheartening loss. And I agree. I definitely distinctly remember losing the game and being like, well, you know, now we're playing that game at San Francisco, and specifically San Francisco, because obviously they were the other super powerhouse, and Green Bay was still kind of up and coming at that point. So, but yeah, it was definitely not a happy Thanksgiving at the McCool household either. So, all right, so I guess we should get into our five reasons at this point, right?
Yes, let's do that.
Okay, so do you want me to start?
Yeah, why don't you? So this is our top five reasons for the Cowboys drop off in 2015. So I'll tell you what, you read your five, just list the five. I'll do mine, then we can kind of talk about some of the ones we have in common.
All right, so this is also obviously kind of very general, so if some things are going to be on kind of different scales. So number one for me was injuries, and this is not – yeah, I mean, this is in order. Number one is injuries. You know, obviously what happened with Dez and Romo and Dunbar and a lot of these other key players. It's Skandrick. Can't forget Skandrick as well. That all had a huge effect on the way things happened. And number two, the preseason fear of injury. I put down – basically what I meant by that is kind of the way that the team – handle the preseason to not get injured, I felt like was detrimental at times, and we've discussed that at great length, I think. Number three is the slow start to the running game. You know, and I think that was – I don't think that that's specifically the running backs. I think it's the confluence of the offensive line not having a lot of time together in the preseason because of due to injuries, the tight ends not particularly blocking well, and then also the running back, you know, situation just kind of being – muddied, you know, also due to injuries because we didn't really know what we had by the time the season started. And then number four, I put a non-existent pass rush. I mean, you know, considering all the upgrades that were made this season, the offseason with the pass rush, it really hasn't panned out on the field very much at all. And then number five, just simply bad luck. And I think that, you know, things that outside of injuries that were bad luck with, you know, the way the ball bounced a couple times, you know, scheduling of the way the timing of how all this happened was bad. The timing of, you know, us having a struggling run game and then losing the two best elements of our pass game, you know, have those two things happening at the same time was just awful. You know, just bad luck in general, I think, was my number five. So what do you have?
Well, you know, actually mine are very, very similar. So I'm going to count down from five to one, one being the most influential.
Okay.
This is actually the number five for me is the one that's actually different than what you have. And that's that I think they're missing lots of role players that played big roles in 2014. You know, as I was saying to you before we started recording, I just can't really bear to watch many of these 2015 games again. I've watched many of the parts of them, but they're really hard to watch over and over again because they're not the football. The quality's not very good. The team's not very enjoyable to watch. The offense is awful, et cetera. So I've actually been in many ways trying to figure out just what's happened. I've been going back to 2014 and watching those games a lot, you know, and I'll watch like the Seattle game and watch the way the team played. And I'm struck again and again by how many plays guys like Sterling Moore and Henry Melton and Anthony Spencer and George Selvey and Bruce Carter and Justin Durand and even Dwayne Harris are making. You know, I certainly understand that there's no way that the Cowboys could have paid market value for all those guys. They were all, you know, none of them were necessarily, you know, like elite starter caliber, et cetera, but they all gave the team a lot of good minutes and a surprisingly high percentage of plays per minute, like, you know, playmaking ability per minute. And the guys who replace them, I think, are probably technically, quote unquote, better players, but their playmaking potential or the playmaking actuality hasn't been anywhere near as good. So I'm missing a lot of those guys. Okay, so number four, the loss of Bill Callahan. You know, I think this goes in many ways hand in hand with what you're saying about the slow start for the running game. I feel like the offensive line has not been itself all season. You know, a lot of people have been talking about the fact they're trying to run against stack boxes. Well, you know what? They ran against stack boxes last year all season too. You know, the second half of the year, there were eight guys in the box almost all year long, which is one of the reasons why Romo and Dez broke out and started killing people last year in the second half of the season. The offensive line just isn't executing as well. It's not double teaming and getting to the second level with the same kind of crispness and proficiency it did last year. And a lot of that, I think it might have to do with the fact that Bill Callahan is elsewhere. Number three, I agree completely with what you said about their fear of injuries. I'm calling this category camp behavior, but I think it's about being too delicate with someone if he, like, you know, gets a hangnail. And so what ended up happening, you remember, like, almost nobody except for Travis Frederick in the offensive line got any time with each other. Nobody who's a meaningful player on this team played more than half of any preseason game, and you know, most of the stars didn't play at all. And so, you know, in the team's desire to get a full roster to game one, I think they almost did that, with the exception of Orlando Scandrick, but they got to game one not really with any sense of cohesion or readiness to play. And then, thanks to the injuries, never had a chance to find that cohesion. Number two for me is injuries, and specifically injuries to what we've talked about as the money five. You know, we talked about this with Tom Ryle when he was on the show. The fact that the most important positions on any football roster are on offense, quarterback, wide receiver, and left tackle, and on defense, defensive end and corner. And the Cowboys actually have blue chip guys at every one of those positions. I wrote a piece for Blogging the Boys a while back that shows that they are have the best player in the division, or one of the best players in the division, at every one of those positions. But the only one who's actually played the entire season thus far is Tyron Smith. So it's not only that they've had injuries. It's not about distribution of injuries like it was in previous seasons. It's injuries to the guys who have the greatest ability and capacity to make difference-making plays at the places where it's most important to do that. And then last, and I think actually this is most important, and this is what you mentioned. This was your number five, bad luck. And so not only in all the ways that you've talked about, but just in the most simple ways, bad calls, turnovers, fumbles bouncing certain ways. You know, there are so many elements about football that – boil down to luck. They really do. And I think a lot of fans don't really want to look at that because in some ways, you know, a football season, the difference between 6-10 and 10-6 is really about randomization. You know, you can get three or four bounces and you're suddenly a playoff team as opposed to a team that's drafting the top 10. That's a huge swing. And it's all about lucky bounces. And so last year they got their fair share of lucky bounces. They really did. They were 4-1 in games that were decided by 7 points or fewer. And this year, obviously, they haven't won a single one of those games, but they played, I think, seven of them, or at least six of them. And so actually, I'm sorry, the first Giants game was one of those games, and they pulled that one out. So you know, they normally a team, regardless of their quality, is around 500. So if you figure there should be 500 in those games, that's they're a 500 team then right now. And then we're not talking about, you know, tanking and giving up on the season. We're talking about the fact that this game against Washington is for first place in the division. So it's really hard to accept that luck might be the sort of primary determining factor. But I really, one of the reasons why I put it first is I just think it's important to allow that to be part of our consideration when we think about what happened to this season. Because, you know, so many people are calling for wholesale sweeping changes. And the truth of the matter is, it might just be as simple as this team wasn't lucky enough.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's when you deal with things like sports or especially football, where there's so much hard work and sweat and blood poured into it, the idea that it could come down to luck is just – it's tough to swallow, you know?
It really is.
Because these guys kill themselves, I mean, almost literally, to play this game. And so the idea that, like, you know, all that hard work probably has equal input into your success as just random chance is disheartening. But
absolutely right. Yeah, and, you know, the thing about football is, you know, to continue with this idea of luck, since we did both mention it in our top five – is that because of there's only 16 games and because there are so many players, what that means is that even when you have a great quarterback, that quarterback doesn't influence the game as much as a really good power forward or a really good center or, you know, a really good point guard does. Because think about the amount of times, the amount of times and how many times over the course of a season a really good player at one of those positions in, let's say, basketball handles the ball versus the amount of times that someone even other than a quarterback, especially other than a quarterback, but even a quarterback handles the ball for a football team. And then, you know, the fact that there's 16 games, there's probably 5 or 10 games every season in a basketball season that are determined by luck as well. But there's 82 games. And here we have the same amount of games in a football season. That's the season. And so there are all kinds of sample size issues that people who study this have looked at and have determined that of the four major American sports, football is the luckiest.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, I think that leads us perfectly into our next segment, kind of a State of the Union section. But before we get into that, we're going to take a quick break, and I want to make sure that we mention Blogging the Boys again. Blogging the Boys is your one-stop shop for all Cowboys info, so check them out all throughout the rest of the season and going into the postseason, and then preseason for next year, guys, as we get ready for the draft. Blogging the Boys will have all the information you need. Make sure you check out their Facebook, Blogging the Boys, and on Twitter, at Blogging the Boys. Back to our third segment, and we wanted to preface this conversation with something Bill Parcells used to always tell reporters, and he used to tell them to wait to ask what he termed the State of the Union questions until after Thanksgiving, and because that was when you could tell what a team was going to be. So now that we are here past Thanksgiving, we thought we should go ahead and discuss the State of the Union for the 2015 Cowboys. So, Rabble, what is the state of our union in Dallas Cowboys Nation?
Well, you know, to me, the nagging question, and this is going to nag us probably until about this time next year, is which season is the outlier? We talked early in the conversation about the delicate balance, the delicate equation that was the winning formula in 2014. So because of that delicacy, you know, and you had said quite rightly that it was the season where everything that needed to go right went right. And so was 2014 this sort of strange aberration that was a kind of zenith that this iteration of the Dallas Cowboys will never achieve again, or at least not achieve anytime soon? Or is in fact this organization, as we believed this offseason, have they turned a corner? With Will McClay, with Stephen Jones, and with Garrett, and the steadiness and the clarity with which they're conducting business, are they going to be the kind of team that can, you know, annually compete for a division title? And this just happens to be this sort of weird outlier year, not unlike the year that, say, for example, the Falcons had a few years ago, where they just suffered like injuries to their entire wide receivers core, and they couldn't move the ball, and a team that had been, you know, a 10-win team for several years in a row suddenly just fell off the face of the planet. And I think this is an open question. I mean, I think, you know, both sides have or can make a valid argument. So where do you fall in that? Do you have a sense of is either of those the real Cowboys? Are the real Cowboys actually those 8-8 teams? Like, where is this team and what is this team?
I tend to think that this season is definitely more of an outlier than last season was. But I don't discount that last season was maybe also its own outlier. I feel like 2014 seemed closer to me to some of the previous iterations in certain ways, because I felt like there were times, and that's what kind of made the 12 and 13 Cowboys, you know, frustrating, is that there were definitely times when they were overachieving, but they didn't feel like they were quite there yet. And 2014, it felt like things had kind of fallen into place. And then 2015, it felt like things just fell apart. I tend to think that what's really going to be difficult, honestly, and this kind of feeds into that part of what you just asked, is, you know, when the Cowboys arrive at the offseason, no matter what the state of it is, I think we can safely kind of assume that it's not going to involve playoffs and it's not going to involve championships. So, at the end of the day, like, are we standing on the precipice of the dawn of a new Cowboys era, the start of a post Romo era, will this team kind of take this hint that maybe they need to kind of not end necessarily, not that Romo's era is over, but maybe start the laying the foundation for the next quarterback on this team? Or are they going to kind of continue the path that seems like they've been trying, where they definitely build towards the future, but also keep in mind that they have a closing window and just continue to try to kind of push the envelope and try to win now while they can, without sacrificing for the future, of course. I think that is kind of where we are right now. And I think that's at least where I'm at as a fan is kind of, I definitely don't expect this team to tank and, you know, anything like that, or try to get better draft position. I think that's ridiculous to even suggest. But I do wonder if the front office mindset may have switched from, more let's get the Super Bowl while we still got Romo to, all right, what do we need to do to protect ourselves in case, Romo just can't ever get back for significant long period of the season. I mean, I think, you've seen him play two games, get injured, then play one game and then get injured. And I understand that it's a broken collarbone, but at this point I have to kind of concede to the Keith Mullins idea of, we got a quarterback, a 36, 37 year old quarterback with bad back and a broken collarbone. It's like, at some point you have to start thinking about the future. And if this season ends up being a negative one, it kind of can provide a situation where we may be able to actually draft a good replacement for Romo instead of just trying to, play until Romo is officially done and has to retire, and then, play a horrible season with some, bus driving quarterback who will lead us to a terrible season and then draft after that. You know, we might be able to reload a quarterback while still kind of pursuing the ultimate goal with Romo.
Yeah, so in some ways we're talking about the Aaron Rodgers model versus the Andrew Luck model.
Yes, yeah,
right? And this actually seems to be one of the hottest topics in Cowboys Twitter land these days, which is this. We weren't going to talk about the offseason, but I do think that even as the denouement of this particular season winds its way to its bitter end. It's a sort of philosophical question that needs to be at the forefront of our imagination, So the Twitter conversation is, as you just kind of suggested, it seems to be, how many opportunities are you going to get a top 10 pick? I mean, I think that's the first thing. So let's assume the Cowboys win no more than one more game, and they're a 3-13 or a 4-12 type of team. They're probably going to have a top 5 pick. So is this the football gods telling you, in some ways, this is the one time you're truly going to suck? Use this time to get the quarterback of the future, because those quarterbacks tend to be drafted in the first round. They tend to be drafted high in the first round, and then continue to, as you've been doing, fill in and get the best players you possibly can to help Romo win now while you have this guy in the fold. And the other flip side of that is, do you say, oh my God, we've got an opportunity for a blue chip defensive player who can really be a difference maker on a defense that's getting better talent wise, but still hasn't really quite, made that leap forward in terms of on-field production? It's a tough question. It's a really hard philosophical conundrum. And I don't envy the Cowboys front office having to face that this offseason. I'll tell you one of the other reasons why is, we talked about the Aaron Rodgers and Andrew Luck as examples, but were there either an Aaron Rodgers or an Andrew Luck in this draft, I think the choice would be made much, much easier and more simple, because, when you have a blue chip quarterback, you have access to a blue chip quarterback, you don't squander that access unless you're the St. Louis Rams, and you get a Monty Hall from Washington, but there isn't that type of quarterback. So this is going to be something really, really interesting to kind of track and watch. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think the other thing that we should add to this situation is that Aaron Rodgers was by no means a can't miss prospect when he came out. I mean, I know your Cal Bears is showing, but he, you know, and not that he wasn't a good quarterback prospect. He definitely was, and he definitely fell in a way that was surprising to everybody. And that was, and that's the other thing I wanted to point out, is that Green Bay, he fell into their lap. And that's really the big difference, I think, and it adds even more pressure, and it speaks to what you're talking about, because if the Cowboys were to do this, and let's say, just for the hypothetical situation, they drafted a Paxton Lynch or some of the other guys. I haven't done a lot
of this. Or how about another Cal Bear? How about Jared Goff?
No, how about not? All right, we won't get into names yet because it's way too early. But if they were to do that and he ended up being a bust – you know, normally if you do that in a when you have a bad team in sort of what we referred to earlier as the Andrew Luck model, right? Worst thing that happens is that you have another terrible season with a young quarterback, or a couple of terrible seasons, and then you're right back in the first picking kind of near the top to try your luck again, right? Like back on the quarterback carousel of Browns fandom. But if you do that while you still have Romo, then you've wasted an opportunity to make a Romo team that could have gone to a championship better, and also not gotten your heir to the throne. So right. I think it's even more risky to try and gamble if you don't love the quarterback that you're taking in the top 10 next year. So my general philosophy, I think, as I've discussed earlier in the podcast and just kind of a lot on this podcast, is that I think you have to make the investment in the quarterback. I think you have to pay the price, whether it's money or draft capital, and go get your guy. So I do think that you should go, if you think you need a quarterback and you're drafting in the top 10 and you've got a guy that you love, you got to get him. You have to get him. But you better be sure. Like, you better be sure that you love him. Because you can't just draft a quarterback because, oh, we're in this rare opportunity where we're picking the top 10 and we, we'll need a quarterback at some point, so we'd better draft a quarterback this year. If there's not a guy up there that you like, do not waste a top 10 pick on that guy. I mean, that's really, really bad idea. But at the same time, if you love a guy that's up there, you can't take the risk that you're going to get an opportunity to draft a quarterback like that at another time. You got to take that guy. You got to take, if there's a quarterback that you love who's available, who you think could be your franchise quarterback, it doesn't matter where you're picking. You got to pick him. But if you're picking in the top 10 and you have a 36-year-old oft-injured quarterback, then you absolutely have to take him.
Yeah, and as you were saying, the bust rate for first-round quarterbacks is very high, and we've seen too many teams overdraft guys in making them first-round quarterbacks when very few, close observers thought they were actually truly first-round talents. And, I've already heard Jerry Jones spout the statistics about three or four times in the last 10 days or so, which is that there's a 50% bust rate on first-round quarterbacks. And so, people have been, particularly assiduous in raking Jerry Jones over the coals recently for his quote-unquote failure to draft a quarterback, failure to acquire a quarterback. They've only drafted one quarterback since Aikman, this kind of nonsense. But there's a very clear reason why they haven't, and that's that 50% bust rate. And, Jerry wants to – Jerry, in particularly in the first round, but, in the early rounds, he wants to hit on guys that are going to make his team better. And so for all the reasons you've articulated, that the guy's going to sit, that the guy could be Jamarcus Russell, how much that sets back the team that does already have the good quarterback – Jerry is, I think, rightfully been gun-shy. I understand why he's gun-shy. And so, for that reason, what you're saying is absolutely right. You have to love this guy and be, in the high 90th percentile in terms of certainty that he's going to work out.
Yeah, and I think, it'll be interesting to see during the offseason whether they absolutely love one of these guys like Goff or Lynch or, Hackenberg. I mean, he's not really a top 10 quarterback anymore, but any of these quarterbacks who are coming out, it'll be interesting to see if they love any one of these guys – so much that they end up pulling the trigger. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I think that's getting close to wrapping up the show. What do we have next week for our listeners?
Well, it's hard to imagine because we've been talking all this episode about the season being over, but there are only going to be 12 games in the books, which means that we're going to be due for our Cowboys at the three-quarter pole episode. And as you know, for each of these kind of four increment episodes, we welcome in a special guest. Next week, we're going to have the great Mike Fisher in to assess the season thus far and to speculate about the team going forward. And we'll also visit with Tex Western from Acme Packing Company, the SB Nation Green Bay Packers site. If you guys might remember, we talked to him before the playoff game last year, and he was a very good and knowledgeable guest. So we're really looking forward to have him coming back to talk about the upcoming game in Wisconsin at beautiful historic Lambeau Field.
Well, those are two great guests right there.
So yeah, I'm telling you,
we're looking forward to that. And you know, guys, again, even if the season feels over, we're here for you guys the rest of the way. We're gonna get through this together. We're Cowboys fans, so this is not something that we're used to, unless you're like me, then you grew up in the '80s. so you know, we'll power through. You know, we're keeping our heads forward. We're stacking one day after another. And before we get going, I want to, again, plug Blogging the Boys. Make sure that you're checking them out for all your Cowboys info. This is where this podcast is going to post. And all the information you need about the upcoming games, you know, our soon-to-come postseason run on the way to the Super Bowl with Matt Castle as quarterback. And all of our postseason analysis as well will be up there at Blogging the Boys. So make sure you're checking out bloggingtheboys.com. Check out their Facebook, Blogging the Boys, and on Twitter, at Blogging the Boys. And until next week, guys, happy trails.
Happy trails, y'all.
Happy trails to you. Until we meet again, happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then. Who cares about the clouds when we're together? Happy trails.